Hello, friends. This is the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW here on 1150 AM in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. I wanted to tell you that after I interviewed Darcy Parisio, a really wonderful animal psychic during the past hour, and just as she ended her interview a couple of minutes ago and now, all this beautiful, beautiful sunshine has come into the studio, and the big message that I got is that the angels are here. So she helped bring in all these beautiful angels. And now, during this second hour, I'll be interviewing Patricia Rasmussen. She's a wonderful Native American elder who will share her unique wisdom. She'll be talking, I plan to be asking her questions about the ascension of the earth and the vortexes along the U.S. West Coast, including Olympia, Port Townsend, and Bellingham, Washington. It's a triangular formation where this area of Puget Sound is actually a very high-energy, beautiful, angelic vortex, and I think it's the reason why many people are attracted here. And the vortex, actually, this spiritual area extends, I've been told, from Vancouver Island and Vancouver, British Columbia, down the West Coast, down to Mount Shasta. She's told me earlier in off-air conversations that the ancient civilization of Lemuria was once part of this land area from Mount Shasta north to Vancouver, Canada. And I know there's a lot of other spiritual centers in the United States, like Sedona and the Edgar Cayce Foundation in Virginia. I'm sure many other places here in the United States and Canada. But I don't know of any other area in North America that's where so much spiritual activity is happening from Mount Shasta north to Vancouver. And you really feel it when you're out here. There's a lot of spiritual things happening. We have a lot of spiritual conferences, and I'm just so happy to have Patricia on today. Patricia, are you there? I'll just say hi. Quick. Are you there, Patricia?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'll bring you on in just a second. But before I go to Patricia, I'd like to ask everyone to please send healing light to my friends Linda and Felix in Chehalis, Washington. They're wonderful people. Felix has been in and out of the hospital recently, and they're wonderful spiritual people. And if you could just say a moment of prayer for them, just send them lots of love and light so they'll feel better and heal. That would be wonderful. Also, this weekend, there's a group of people leaving from Tacoma and Seattle to bring food and supplies to the wonderful people at Standing Rock in North Dakota who are protesting the building of the oil pipeline there. They need clothing, food, and anything else that you might like to donate. To donate, please call Jeff Johnson at area code 253-884-2400. Excuse me. Or Sarah at 253-937-8153. I'll repeat that again, 253-884-2400, or Sarah at 253-973-8153. A little bit of background. Patricia is a Native American elder, and I'm so happy to have her on today. She's been interested in the water issues around Standing Rock in North Dakota, as well as the power of prayer. She was a big supporter, or is a big supporter, of Dr. Masaru Emoto, and she helped arrange his 2010 tour to the Pacific Northwest, and she also supports the Emoto Peace Project, a very spiritual lady. Her website, I've got a couple websites here. Her website is www.earthwisdomfoundation.net. And one of the things I'd like to play now in honor of Dr. Emoto is this water song. And I'd like to play just the first couple of minutes of it, and then we'll go to our interview with Patricia.
Kitano.
どこから来て、どこへ行くの、何のために生きて。
Thank you so much, Eric, for playing the first few minutes of that water song in honor of Dr. Emoto. Patricia, are you still there?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I'd like to lead off your interview, if you don't mind, with a short little water prayer that Dr. Emoto used to do. And as we say it, I'm not going to ask my listeners around the world to please say this. It's a short little prayer, but it really does help. And if you could please send lots of love and light to the children and people of Fukushima, the Emoto Peace Project, as well as the people in North Dakota who are fighting against this awful oil pipeline that threatens the water supplies of the Midwest. And if you could just say it after me three times, it would be wonderful. Water, we are sorry. Water, please forgive us. Water, we thank you. And water, we love you. If you could repeat after me, Patricia, if you don't mind. Water, we are sorry.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we thank you.
And water, we love you.
Water, we love you.
And one more time, please. Water, we are sorry.
Water, we are sorry.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, please forgive us.
Water, we thank you.
Water, we thank you.
And water, we love you.
Water, we love you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That was dedicated to Dr. Masaru Emoto, one of the world's most spiritual men who passed away in 2014. But he's still very much with us today, and I can feel his presence. To start off your interview, I'd like to play Chief Seattle's speech to the U.S. President in 1954. The U.S. President at that time had asked to buy Chief Seattle's land so Seattle could be established as a city. And Chief Seattle rhetorically asked how the president could buy the land that they themselves thought that no one could own the land. And I'd like to play the first couple of minutes of this narration now by Chief Seattle, and then we'll go on to our interview with Patricia.
The president in Washington sends word that he wishes to buy our land. But how can you buy or sell the sky? The land? The idea is strange to us. If we do not own the freshness of the air and the sparkle of the water, how can you buy them? Every part of the earth is sacred to my people. Every shining pine needle, every sandy shore, every mist in the dark woods, every meadow, every humming insect, all are holy in the memory and experience of my people. We know the sap which courses through the trees as we know the blood that courses through our veins. We are part of the earth, and it is part of us. The perfumed flowers are our sisters. The bear, the deer, the great eagle, these are our brothers. The shining water that moves in the streams and rivers is not just water, but the blood of our ancestors. The rivers are our brothers. They quench our thirst. They carry our canoes and feed our children. So you must give the rivers the kindness that you would give any brother. If we sell you our land, remember that the air is precious to us, that the air shares its spirit with all the life that it supports. Will you teach your children what we have taught our children, that the earth is our mother? What befalls the earth befalls all the sons of the earth. This we know, the earth does not belong to man. Man belongs to the earth. Man did not weave the web of life. He is merely a strand in it. Whatever he does to the web, he does to himself. to harm the earth is to heap contempt on its creator. Your destiny is a mystery to us. What will happen when the buffalo are all slaughtered, the wild horses tamed? What will happen when the secret corners of the forest are heavy with the scent of many men, and the view of the ripe hills is flooded with talking wires? Where will the thicket be? Gone. Where will the eagle be? Gone. And what is to say goodbye to the swift pony and then hunt? The end of living and the beginning of survival.
Thank you so much, Eric, for playing that. Very profound and beautiful words. With that, I'd like us to bring on Patricia Rasmussen, a beautiful Native American elder, with much wisdom for my audience. Patricia, welcome to Out of This World.
Thank you. Once again, I need to say I'm not a Native American. I'm a non-Native. But I've had many Indian friends and teachers since 1987 that I've worked with. And in 2007, I began helping a Lummi elder, Pauline Hilaire, write her book about the genocide that happened in the Northwest Coast, especially to the Lummi tribe.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I'd like to start with an acknowledgement of the tribe that lived here in Olympia, mm-hmm. where Olympia stands now, for thousands of years before the arrival of the white settlers.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the band was the Cha. So this is an acknowledgement that I am on their territory right now. We acknowledge that these waters and lands are the territory of the Stachas people. The Stachas people are of the Squaxin Island tribe. The surrounding mountains, valleys, shorelines, and waterways are imbued with their presence. We seek to nurture our relationship with our Coast Salish neighbors and our shared responsibilities to this place, their homeland, where we mutually abide. I helped, as I said, I helped Pauline Hilaire to do her research
mm-hmm.
on her father, Joe Hilaire's deathbed. He told her about the documents that are in the basement of the Suzalo Library at the University of Washington, and he asked her to go there and find anything related to the genocide of the Lummi tribe and to write a book. And so she worked on it for 40 years.
Wow, amazing.
It just came out in May, and I helped her for 9 years.
Beautiful.
Until it finally came through. So because of that background, I'll tell you a little bit of what happened here in Olympia.
Okay.
Where I am.
Oh, by the way, what's the name of the book in case people would
the
like to...
The name of the book is Rights Remembered.
Rights
Remembered. Like Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S, Rights Remembered.
Okay.
By Pauline Hilaire, H-I-L-L-A-I-R-E.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so in 2011, a tribal leader told me that if I would go to where the two freeways come together, down below where the children's climbing toys are, mm-hmm. I would learn what happened to the native people who used to live there. I went there to see what he meant, and at Tumwater Falls Park, I saw a reader board that said the Stachas people had lived below the falls for thousands of years in cedar plank homes and had rock-lined pit ovens to preserve seafood. I wondered why we never hear about the Stachas people.
Mm-hmm.
A visit to the Washington State Library commenced a year and a half of research and the writing of my report, What Happened to the Stachas People.
Mm-hmm.
I found that the Stachas people who had lived for thousands of years right here where we live had been removed by genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Their main village, the Chas, was where Tumwater Historical Park is today.
Mm-hmm.
Their village, the Chutwood, was centered at 4th Avenue and Columbia of Olympia today.
Mm-hmm.
There were settlements all along Bud Bay. Their chief, Nahotamset, was a man of peace. The first white settlers to come to Washington State displaced the Tsas Indians from their village below Tumwater Falls. Mm-hmm. In October of 1845, Michael T. Simmons built a grist mill on the site and later a sawmill. In 1851, Clanrick and Phoebe Crosby arrived in Tumwater and bought the land from Michael T. Simmons. Crosby filed a land claim under the Land Donation Act of 1850 for 640 acres, virtually all of the land on both sides of Tumwater Falls and including the Tsas village site. Crosby's claim to the land depended on extinguishing Indian title and removing the Indians. By 1854, there were only 20 Indians counted in Tumwater. Mm-hmm. By fall of 1855, Michael T. Simmons had rounded up any remaining Indians and put them in internment camps, 460 on Squaxin Island and 1,200 on Fox Island, where many became sick and died. In the winter of 1846, Levi Smith and Edmund Sylvester arrived at the Beschetwood village and staked a joint claim of 320 acres, taking over the Indian village and the entire peninsula comprising Olympia and the state capital of today. By 1855, the Indian village had disappeared.
Well, I have to tell you a historical note. You mentioned Crosby. Was that the grandfather of Bing Crosby?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah, because there's a house there right at that intersection, which is the Crosby House. And I grew up in Olympia, and the other area that you talked about over on Mud Bay, was there a village there on Mud Bay?
Yes, there was a village on Mud Bay.
Okay.
I said Mud Bay.
Okay.
All of Mud Bay and the Deschutes River watershed were the Tsas people.
Because pardon me for interrupting, but I felt their spirits around the bay, and I've always wondered whether there was a there was a village there. Actually, there's a tavern there now. It's been there for many years.
That village, they were killed by genocide.
Okay.
There was a Mud Bay village, but they were killed.
Now, there is Wow. Has there been any healing ever done for them, for these spirits that were killed, murdered in that area?
Yes, I have a friend, and we did some for them.
Good.
And maybe others have, too.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Wonderful. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is when the settlers came to where Tacoma, Washington is today, Pierce County, mm-hmm. I have friends who were elders with the Puyallup tribe, and the Puyallup said that they cursed the land when they came. And I've always wondered why Tacoma has some problems. They have one of the highest crime rates in the United States. The traffic congestion's always congested there. It's a nice place, but that's what I heard. But do you know anything about that?
I don't know about that specifically, but
okay.
My impression is that from a lot of work at these sites is that those were very dark forces that came in and took over these places of the light that
sure.
were their sacred
sure.
places.
Sure.
And they kept them until recently when people have done a lot of spiritual work to reclaim them.
Hmm. Interesting.
But I wonder if I could finish reading.
Please do, yeah.
About this, yeah. So, Indians who did not go to the internment camps were killed. Governor Isaac Stevens told his volunteer militia that any Indians not in the internment camp were to be exterminated. Indians were shot and hung. Indian families peacefully fishing were massacred, as in the Moshul massacre in the Nisqually. Stevens' map of the Indian War battlefield shows flags indicating locations of battlefields, including in Lacey, but there were no so-called Indian hostels in the Lacey area. They were much further north near the Green and White Rivers. It was peaceful Indians who were killed here. The descendants of those who survived the genocide now live in the Nisqually and Squaxin Island tribes. We who live here today can't change what happened at that time, but we can look at the truth, acknowledge what happened, and apologize to the Nisqually and Squaxin Island tribes. I've shared my report with the mayors and city councils of Olympia, Tumwater, and Lacey, and called on them to apologize to the tribes for what happened in their cities. I've asked Governor Inslee to apologize for the genocide perpetrated by our first governor, Isaac Stevens. I think that Inslee, as the current governor, could make an apology for what the first governor of Washington did. That's my feeling, and I hope that that happens.
Yes, I hope so, too. I hope so, too. It was a time of a lot of turmoil, I know. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, too, Patricia, is that are these energy vortexes? You mentioned to me before that there's vortexes in Olympia, Port Townsend, and Bellingham. Could you talk a little bit more about those, please?
Well, the sacred site, the vortex in Olympia, is where Tumwater Historical Park is. That's the center. It's a large vortex. And the Indians knew it. That's why their village was there.
Oh, okay.
And it's a there's a story I was told that about that site, just to kind of show the sacred nature of that site. There were giants up in on Vancouver Island in BC. Two giants, and they were bothering the people. So there were four people from down here in the Olympia area who decided to go up and stop giants from bothering the people. So they went to the Chas village, and they went up the vortex and traveled on the skyways up to BC. And then when they were just over where the giants were, they came down, and it was just getting dark. And so they went to sleep, and they decided they would attack the giants in the morning. But one of the people was Mouse. So he went to where the giants were sleeping and chewed their bowstring. And then just as he was finished, the sun was coming up, so he went back to where the others were, and the sun came up, and the giants were awake, so they attacked the giants, and the giants saw that their bowstrings were broken, so they gave up. They said, "We won't bother the people anymore." So the four people went up the vortex. They call it... a portal, went up the portal, traveled on the skyways back down, and came back down at the Chas, at this at the vortex here, at the portal.
Right.
But one of them didn't make it down the right portal and ended up on the east side of the mountains, and that's why we have rattlesnakes there today.
Oh, interesting.
But
interesting.
This is an ancient story. So.
Wow.
It shows all of us the sacred nature of that particular portal.
Oh, fascinating.
So they all know that's a portal, and that's important, and that's why the people live there. And that's why so many different tribes came there for ceremonies and potlatches and visited, and it was a sacred gathering site.
These giants that they referred to in Vancouver, were these the Anunnaki?
I don't know.
Okay.
All I know is the story I was told. And for me, the story, for me, the sacred nature and the fact that, you know, people know that there's a portal there.
Okay, interesting. If I know there's a park there now, and let's say that I went down there this weekend and had a picnic, and the weather's not the greatest, but if I did... Is there a chance I could step into another dimension and be transported by this portal somewhere up to Vancouver?
Well, that's what they think.
Interesting. Interesting. Did the Native Americans who were living there in the mid-1850s, did they use those portals regularly to travel north into up north into what is now Canada?
I don't know. I think the reason that the person told me that story was to show me that the capability of it, and that they know about that.
Interesting. I wanted to ask you, thank you so much for sharing that, Patricia. I wanted to ask you about what your opinion is of what's going on in North Dakota. There's been a lot of activity back there. There's an oil pipeline, and I know you've been active in that. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, what happened here with the genocide and the trouble is only, you know, an example of what happened across the nation.
True.
The genocide and the stealing the tribes' lands and
right.
making treaties with them and then breaking the treaties. And so the government has broken the treaties over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people are saying it's enough.
Mm-hmm.
And actually what's happening in Standing Rock started in a ceremony, and they were told by the spirit that if they stayed in peace, then the pipeline would be stopped. But if they became violent, then the pipeline would go in. So you see them staying only in prayer and only in peace. The violence is coming from the sheriff and the other law enforcement people. So we're seeing terrible, terrible things happen, and that's, I think, why the whole world is involved, and millions of people are watching what's happening there and
mm-hmm.
are shocked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the pipeline is going through, it's going through ancient burial sites, is that right? Is that, that's, and people are so upset about
yes.
that?
Okay. Yes, through ancient burial sites and cultural sites, and it would harm their water.
So okay.
their theme is water is life.
Sure.
Which is true.
Sure.
And I think that's another reason why people around the world have gotten involved and right. are supporting them and standing with Standing mm-hmm. Rock, because we all know, many of us know, that water is life.
Right.
That
right.
we need to start defending the water
mm-hmm.
from oil companies.
Mm-hmm.
It just can't go on any longer, and people feel that, and that's why there are apparently more than 5,000 people back in the camps again.
Right.
And as the company just said on Tuesday that they would be drilling under the Missouri in 2 weeks, even though they don't have a permit, they don't have the easement.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they are going to. They say they're going to defy Obama and dig it anyway. So we're going to need to watch for the next 2 weeks what happens.
Well, it's amazing to me how many different laws have been violated. You've got the National Environmental Policy Act, which is supposed to be followed. It's federal law. You've got a second law protecting its, I can't remember the exact title. I looked up the site here a couple weeks ago. It's another law in protecting Native American burial sites. You've got state, as well as that, you've got state environmental laws. You're supposed to have a due process. They don't even... The oil companies don't even have the necessary permits to go ahead and do it, but yet they're still plowing ahead. The federal government, which could step in, hasn't been, I don't think it's going to be finished, Patricia. There's too much public attention on it, and if they really want to build a pipeline, they could reroute it into areas which are not culturally sensitive to the Native Americans and to the environment. But they haven't even done that yet. But I don't see it being built, not with all the public attention on it. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't think it will be either.
No.
But it's getting worse as it goes up to the end. But in the end, I don't think it will be built. It's finished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a famous line from the Mamas and Papas in an old song, and the song goes something like this. The darkest hour is just before dawn, and so that's why that's how I look at the oil pipeline now. But there's been so much emphasis placed on it. That brings up another point, too, I would like to mention to Patricia and to my many listeners around the world. That's why I like to highlight things which are not being reported or focused on the major media here in this country, because there's a lot of important issues which just aren't being reported by the mass media here, you know, including Fukushima, which is being totally ignored by our mass media. Much of what goes on in North Dakota is barely mentioned on the press. You just don't hear about it. Nothing. And so if you have information control, then you can control how the public reacts. And I don't think anyone out there in this country or any other country around the world would accept the way that people are being treated back there. I mean, innocent people are being sprayed and beaten up by the local sheriff's office. They're violating all these laws. But on the other hand, I think it's right for them to react in a peaceful way. Don't meet violence with violence, but just be very peaceful. And like Mahatma Gandhi did during the last century when he kicked out the British out of India, is that he was able to get rid of the British finally in 1947 in India by using nonviolent, peaceful means. And I think that's the answer.
Yes, it's the only way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. 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 I wanted to ask you, too, Patricia, a little bit about the planet's ascension. I know that back in September, I was told by my spirit friends on the other side that the planet had shifted into this positive, beautiful positive field now, where our future for ourselves and our children and our children's children is very, 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 very bright. And one of the things that I've been very impressed with, listening to that piece that I played, that response to U.S. President the response by Chief Seattle in 1854 to the U.S. President about buying their land, that they understood that we on this planet, humanity on this planet, were part of the Earth. And we're not separate from the Earth. And really, if we hurt Mother Earth, if we hurt the planet, if we pollute the planet, then we're really hurting ourselves, because we're all part of the same supreme being.
Yeah.
What do you see is happening in the future, Patricia? Just curious to see what your viewpoint is of what the coming
events.
Well,
today is 11/11. Mm-hmm. And this is supposed to be the completion of what you were talking about, this ascension, mm-hmm. so that we move in to our peaceful, joyful, respectful way of living on the earth.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I agree totally. And I always see good things happening for humanity in the future. You know, I have to tell you, I want to thank you so much for doing that research on what had happened in the Olympia area and or throughout Puget Sound. I had no idea. I grew up in Olympia, and I had no idea that was the history there. I always wanted to know, but now I knew.
Yeah, and many of my Indian friends had told me that there was used to be an Indian village under the Olympia Capitol building.
You're kidding. Wow, amazing.
Yeah. Uh-huh, there was. And so someone asked me if I could document that. And so I spent another 2 months working, and I did document it. There was an Indian village underneath the Capitol building.
Wow.
And in fact, Mary Slocum, a famous Indian Shaker, mm-hmm. One of the founders of the Indian Shaker Church, her mother was born in that village.
Oh,
it was under the Capitol.
Oh, you're
kidding. So part of
kidding.
When I first started doing the research mm-hmm. in 2011,
right.
As I, it was hard to find the information in the beginning because it appeared to be a big secret because I couldn't find, I went to the Capitol Museum in mm-hmm. Olympia and asked them, and they didn't know anything about the Tsimshian people. I said, well, they live right here where your building is. And there was nothing in there about them, and except there was a map, big map on the wall, and it showed the Deschutes River named Tsimshian.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only thing in the museum. And so the more I looked around, the more I thought, well, this is a big secret. They don't want people to find out
sure.
about that there were Indians here and that about the genocide.
Well, and also, too, there's state archaeological and federal laws, too, that if there was a village there, somebody may come up and say, hey, you need to move the capital and dig it up because we have to find out.
Right. Uh-huh.
It's possible. Is there a vortex there at the capital site? I'm just curious.
Well, I'm not sure. That is a very large vortex. The center is mm-hmm. in the in Tumwater Historical Park.
Okay.
My sense is that it's a very big vortex.
Wow, amazing.
And encompasses much of Olympia.
I have to mention this. I've also heard from friends up in the San Juan Islands that there's some beautiful vortexes in that area as well, outside Bellingham. It's actually a very large area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a big issue out here during the last couple of years where the U.S. Navy has wanted to test these new, what they call growler jets, in that particular area. And the problem with their testing is that the decibel level is up to 140 decibels. And at that level, eardrums split open, people get heart attacks. I haven't heard much about the issue, but the last couple of years, a lot of people were complaining that they were, the sentiment out in the San Juan Islands was that the Navy was trying to shut down these vortexes. It was more than military training exercises. They could test these flights anywhere, but they chose this San Juan Islands to shut down these light vortexes.
Yeah, that could be. I hadn't thought of it that way, but mm-hmm. Orcas Island actually is the center of the Siwas tradition. In fact, there were the Waikaha people who 60,000 years ago mm-hmm. were living where Orcas Island and Lopez Island are.
Uh-huh.
And they, Waikaha, and they, in 6,500 years ago, their shaman told them that a great darkness was coming.
Oh.
They should select 150 people and put them in big canoes,
mm-hmm.
and they should go because they were living the way of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And so these 150 people should travel to a place on the planet where they could keep the way of peace alive.
Oh, wow.
And the people who stayed behind were supposed to go through this great darkness and keep the way of peace alive.
Mm-hmm.
So they selected the 150 people,
mm-hmm.
and they went. They had a conch shell that, if they blew it, it made the sound of a wounded baby whale.
Right.
So they went out on the ocean, and they blew the conch shell. The whales came, and then they showed them the way all the way down the coast to Chile, and then they showed them the way across to New Zealand. And they lived in kind of a secluded way in New Zealand
mm-hmm.
all these years.
Right.
And they kept passing this oral story down.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 90s, the Waikaha man wrote a book, Song of Waikaha, and told their whole story and told this story of them leaving
mm-hmm.
The San Juan Islands and going to New Zealand. And then the women wrote another book, Whispers of Waikaha, which is about their way of life, you know, how they live day to day and take care mm-hmm. of each other and
beautiful
and their spirit, kind of their spiritual life and their ways of life.
Mm-hmm.
But in about maybe, I don't know, 7 or so years ago,
mm-hmm.
there was a Waikaha woman in New Zealand who saw herself in the story, because the story said that at a time in the future, there would be a woman who would come back and find where they had left them, and then it would be the time that they would bring back this mm-hmm. way of peace. So they were here at least 60,000 years.
Wow. That's amazing,
and so you can buy the books actually
through
the website, Song of Waikaha.
Okay, how do you spell Waikaha?
W A I T A H A, Waikaha.
Okay, thank you.
And so her name is Makare. She saw herself, recognized that she was the one who was supposed to come back, so she came back here and A number of us met her. She came to Olympia and spoke and told her story.
Beautiful.
She was trying to find people who would help her find where they left from.
Oh, wow.
And so she ended up staying with some people on Lopez Island.
Mm-hmm.
And they found there was the rock. There were several things that were described in this oral story. And she found the rock that was on Lopez Island that was fit the description. And but then she hadn't found the beach where they left from. But she was staying with some friends and got up early in the morning one morning, went down to the beach and kind of fell down from a big energetic energy touching her. And then she thought, oh, I wonder if this is the place. The next morning she got up and went to the other end of the kind of crescent-shaped beach.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happened. And then the oral story said that it was in the shape of a whale.
Oh, wow.
So they looked on, they Googled Google Earth, and
right.
They looked, they found it was the shape of a whale. So,
oh, wow.
She had found that place. So
that's amazing.
She's come back, you know, four or five times.
Wow.
To here and has a lot of friends here. And,
well, I'd love to talk to her. And you said that that book is available. Is that on your earthwisdomfoundation.com website?
No, I don't have it on. But you can look on, just Google it, and you'll find where you can order it.
Okay.
I'm sure you can order it through the Waitaha website. If you just Google Waitaha,
mm-hmm.
And they have a website.
Okay.
They used to have the story about the going back to 60,000 years ago being mm-hmm. here, and mm-hmm. much of that story was on the web, but I think so many people were bothering them about mm-hmm. it and mm-hmm. poo-pooing it,
mm-hmm.
they just took it off. But the books are there, and
okay, wonderful.
And she came here and told us, so.
Wow. Well, the name of my program, of course, is called Out of This World, and so it doesn't bother me for you to talk about it here on the air at all.
Orcas Island was the center of that civilization.
I have to ask you this question. I know you told me off air here a couple of days ago that there was a part of Lemuria that broke off when Atlantis and Lemuria disappeared about 12,500 years ago, and that part settled on the U.S. West Coast. Would you mind explaining a little bit about that? I know that my listeners will find that fascinating story.
Yeah, it's a number of years ago that I saw that map and a story on the web, and I have a friend who has a website, vortexmaps.com, and I thought it was on his website. I called him this morning, and he's going to look for this map and put it back up there again. It's so long ago that so it's vortexmaps.com, and probably in not too long, in a few days or so, we'll have found it and put it up.
From is that vortex maps plural or vortex map singular .com?
I think it's plural.
Vortexmaps.com. Yeah, because I went to
that. My experience is that mm-hmm. much of my time has been spent in my healing work in Bellingham,
mm-hmm.
Port Townsend, and Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know, I saw the map and I thought, oh, that makes sense, you know, why I'm doing my healing work in these three places, back and forth, back and forth,
well,
back and forth, back and forth.
The part of Lemuria that broke off from their civilization many thousands of years ago, Patricia, did that settle from Shasta North, or what? Do you remember that? I thought it was from Shasta North to Vancouver Island, but is that the right location, or was it further north in this area where it broke off?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I just remember that it was. I remember those three towns, and that there was this chunk, and I think it did go up to Vancouver Island,
uh-huh.
and I don't remember all the details. That's why I called Anne with the maps and.
Mm-hmm.
To help me find that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to tell you that because I wanted to give you the time to talk about anything you like, Patricia, as far as like Native American wisdom or anything other information you'd like to give my listeners today.
Well, I guess I'd like to share that in 2011, an Eastern Shoshone medicine person named Blue Thunder came here to Olympia, and he started doing he had been doing medicine wheels around the world. He was from Wyoming, and his elders had gone out into the petroglyphs in Utah and anywhere there were petroglyphs, and actually this way the medicine wheel worked was out there written on rocks. They found it. And so he learned, he did the first big medicine wheel, the Grand Teton medicine wheel, in 2004. And the at that time, the Yellowstone supervolcano was erupting. Maybe people remember it. They were afraid that it would erupt.
Oh, I remember that. And,
yeah. And so he used this knowledge that he had taken off of the petroglyphs of how to do the medicine wheel, and then he made a map of 19 vortexes with the Grand Tetons in the middle, and then he did a ceremony, and he had people on each of those 19 mountain vortexes, and you can see the map on our website, but it calmed the supervolcano.
Beautiful.
And scientists knew that it had because they had the records, you know, of the seismographs from that period. And then he went to Big Bear, California. They had had an epic 7-year drought.
Wow.
And they found out about him, and so they asked him to do a medicine wheel ceremony there. And he did. And shortly after the ceremony, it snowed 2 feet.
Wow.
And they get stuck in the place where they were doing the ceremony.
Oh,
and
wow.
Again, that one was the eight-pointed star.
Oh, beautiful.
Eight-pointed star, sacred geometry, you know. So you have the north, south, east, west, and then the northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest, and one in the middle. So he came to Olympia and was in a sweat lodge, and Chief Seattle asked him to do the Pacific Northwest medicine wheel.
Beautiful.
To heal the tears of the past so that we could clean out all that negative energy from the genocide and
good
and everything that had happened here. And so we did a great big medicine wheel on the equinox March of 2011.
Wow, beautiful.
And then we've done those every equinox and solstice since. So it's the eight-pointed star. Mount Rainier is one of the points, and and I don't know. Maybe I'm running out of time, but
no,
you're
fine.
Edited a book for him, and it is on our website, the EarthWisdomFoundation.net. You can go there and click on our new book, and you can download it and read how the medicine wheel works. It's called Healing Mother Earth with a Medicine Wheel.
I think you gave me a copy of that a couple of months ago. And
yes,
I did. It's so nice.
It's about 33 pages. It's kind of in the format of a children's book.
Wonderful. Well, I have my Galactic Wisdom Conference is on March 10, 11, and 12. And I don't know when the equinox is in March. Will it be in March of 2017?
Yeah, okay. March.
Okay. I'd like to coordinate with you to do that healing ceremony along with the conference. I don't know the dates, but we'll figure it out. And I'd like to do that with you. There'll be a lot of people coming in. Of course, Dr. Yoshi and Michiko Hayashi will be coming in from Tokyo to the conference. I've invited Paul Hellyer, the former Canadian Defense Minister, who was actually friends with President Kennedy back in the early 60s. He's a wonderful man. He'll be coming. Scott Lemriel, who always brings his friends from the Galactic Alliance in, too. The Galactics, I'm just told now that they would love to participate, too. So there will be a lot of really interesting people coming in. I'm also going to be inviting Billy Fay Woodard, of course, Zora of the Hollow Earth, and his dad, the Zora of Hollow Earth. So we'll have a lot of interesting people from out of town and out of this world there, too. And I'd like to do that healing ceremony with you during that that time.
Sure, we could do that. Mm-hmm.
That'd be good. Depending upon what's going on in North Dakota, I don't know if we could extend it that far, but I'd also like to do some healing for what's going on back there as well. I think you look at Fukushima, you look at the oil spill in 2010 and the Gulf there. The planet itself needs a lot of healing. And as Dr. Emoto demonstrated with his wonderful research, that our thoughts do create our reality. And if you send love and light to an area, you can clean up pollution. You can reverse environmental damage. One of the experiments that Dr. Emoto did before he passed away was that he took a bottle of radioactive water, Patricia, and he wrote the words love and gratitude on the bottle and put a crystal of a beautiful water crystal on it of love and gratitude. And guess what happened within 48 hours after he did that?
What?
The water completely transformed itself. The radiation completely disappeared within 48 hours, and you could drink the water.
Wow.
And imagine if we did that same prayers to clean up Puget Sound or to clean up the Gulf oil spill. We did one earlier for Fukushima that I know has helped. And if we do one for North Dakota, too, I know it helps because we are powerful spiritual beings meant to co-create with the Supreme Being, the entity that created all this, to create a beautiful, loving, very kind, benevolent planet. That's the direction we're headed. We're not headed toward World War III. We're not headed toward Armageddon, despite of what's on our major media, which seems to relish doom and gloom. I don't buy it. I think our future is very bright and very beautiful, and this is the kind of future we'll have for our children and children's children. Sure, we have our problems. I'm not saying we don't, but we're going to deal with it. I know we're going to deal with it, and we have a very positive, bright future ahead of us. So,
and Blue Thunder worked with Dr. Emoto.
Oh.
He went to Japan and worked with Dr. Emoto.
Beautiful.
And Dr. Emoto came here and helped him with some of his ceremonies, and that's because Blue Thunder was doing the same things as Dr. Emoto, but he was cleaning the environment.
Beautiful.
Cleaning negativity out of the environment.
Beautiful.
Including the water, but also the land.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, I was told last year when I was at James Gillian's UFO Ranch down at Mount Adams to do this water prayer and mention Fukushima on as many shows as I can, because our thoughts are powerful, and they do help create a beautiful and happy world. And I wanted to know everyone here, I think, has a purpose in life, and our purpose is to make this planet a better place. And never think that you're just one person, that you can't make a change, because you can make a change. You know, Mahatma Gandhi was one person, and look at the wonderful things he did. Jack Kennedy was another, just one person, but I think he was one of our greatest presidents. Senator Robert F. Kennedy, before he was killed, was a great man. Also did a lot of changes. Martin Luther King, campaigned for civil rights. Look at all the good things he did. So it's just one person. And Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, they were all one person, but yet they affected great changes.
Right, and so can we.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
And so are we.
Yeah, we are. We are. Patricia, I just want to say I want to thank you so much for coming on today. We've got about a minute and a half left, and I want to thank everyone around the world listening to Out of This World Radio. We're a listener-supported nonprofit radio program, and if you'd like to donate, please go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. For donations of $25 or more today, I'll give you a free brief psychic reading, or $10 or more, I'll be happy to sends you a beautiful portrait of Zora, one of the high priests of the Hollow Earth, and the portrait itself is infused with lots of love and light, and he said it would help people with their spiritual or physical conditions. We've got about a minute and a half left now. Patricia, I'd like to give you the rest of the time to please say whatever you like to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
If you would like to keep track of what's happening in Standing Rock, so you can stand with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, they have a number of Facebook opportunities, addresses. There's the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. They mm-hmm. have a website, and there's Sacred Stone Camp Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
There's Red Warrior Camp Facebook. Those are the three I've been getting my information from, because there's so much happening every day. It's hard to keep up with. So I've been paying attention to those. There are a number of GoFundMe sites where you can donate money to help them. They're setting up for the winter, different kinds of housing. A bunch of people have taken Mongolian yurts, set up a yurt village.
Wonderful.
So you can help out in many ways, but by watching on Facebook and seeing what to do, you can help them.
Right. Well, Patricia, thank you so much for coming on today. Everyone, have a wonderful weekend. I can't wait to talk to you all next week. Bye-bye, and have a beautiful day, everyone.